Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. It's my pleasure to be part of your day. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. I'm Jim Blasingame. Did I say that? I can't remember. I do this so much I couldn't remember, but you know who I am. And I'm excited about having our good friend Joan Pride back on the show. Joan, welcome back.
Thanks, Jim. Hello there.
We missed you.
I would hope so.
Yeah. What has it been? Has it been 2 weeks or 3 weeks since you were here?
Two. I was there the week before Thanksgiving.
And then we missed you the week before that. Well, I think the week before that you were gone. But
yes.
Anyway, we missed you.
No, you were gone.
I was gone. That's right. Yeah. I was gone. And so anyway, we're glad you're here. And by the way, folks, Joan is senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I usually say that if I didn't say that. Joan, what's happening inside the Beltway these days? Here's a question for you, Joan.
Mm-hmm.
The Baker Report, the Iraq, what do they call it? The Iraq
study group.
Study group. That's an odd name. I mean,
I know.
I've been part of Bible.
Sounds
study
like
groups.
A bunch of college kids getting ready for midterm exams.
Well, or a Bible study group, something
right.
That you know, the Methodist Church would do on Wednesday night or something, you know.
Right.
And so that's a strange name, the Iraq Study Group. That doesn't give it any kind of credibility to me. The name. I mean, brands are important, Joan.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, so they've got some pretty heavy hitters in there, and there are five Democrats, five Republicans. But apparently, this top secret report, Joan, four of the members gabbed it up with the New York Times.
And it's also leaking out all over the place elsewhere.
What's...
too.
Do you think that they're doing this on purpose? I mean, do you think people leak these things, groups leak these things just to sort of to sort of soften the blow of what they're going to say? What do you think?
Well, a lot of times when things get leaked, particularly by the White House, and I'm not saying in this case, but just in general, they may be leaked as trial balloons, which often happens,
right.
Say, for example, a possible appointment to a cabinet post.
Right.
They leak the name just to see what kind of reaction it gets. And if it gets a really bad reaction, maybe that person is never nominated.
They pull it back, yeah. Just to sort of sniff the wind a little bit, put their finger up in the lick their finger and stick it up in the air kind of thing. What about... but it seemed all this leaking business, like the leak, the Stephen Hadley thing that was leaked on the report on Maliki, the Iraqi prime minister. It seems like does everything get leaked up there these days?
Boy, it sure seems that way. I'm not sure. I don't know what the study group gains by leaking its findings before they come out. I really don't.
Right. But they're supposed to. But I thought they were going to release them this week. But it turns out they're not going to release them until next
December 6th. Yeah.
Yeah. What the delay was all about?
No, we haven't heard that. I mean, I don't know if they're trying to bring a recalcitrant member or two into the fold by making this kind of a fait accompli. I don't know. I'm stumped.
Recalcitrant and fait accompli in one sentence. That's pretty good there, Joan. I'm impressed.
Well, your listeners are very sophisticated.
They are. They can handle that, even
sure.
If I can't. Hey, okay, Joan, let's move over to the letter. And on that happy note, let's move over to the letter and talk about this... What is it about a real estate bubble that people get so excited about, Joan? I mean, they keep wanting to talk about it, don't they?
Boy, they sure do. But we're not really talking about that this week.
Well, you're saying the bubble risk is low, right?
But we're talking about the commercial
market. Commercial real estate, not
we're
home,
saying
not housing.
While the residential housing market is having some problems, the commercial property market is, we're saying, remains hot.
Right. Well, and the thing is if you think about it, Joan, hiring, I mean, that unemployment is at a record low. I mean, what is it, 4.4% or something like that right now?
Something like that, yeah.
And as we'll see in a minute, the numbers may even be underestimated. The jobs numbers may even be underestimated. And so when you've got that many people working, Joan, you got to put those people somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, yes, absolutely.
You know, and of course, there are more and more teleworkers these days, people who work from home. But the vast majority of people who are hired, somebody puts their rear end in a seat in an office somewhere, don't they?
Right.
And so that makes a lot of sense that commercial property would increase. And, of course, our population is growing. I'm seeing a lot of retail growth out there, Jen, a lot of retail construction.
Boy, around here, too, yes.
Oh, yeah, I bet it is. Well, of course, that's just for you, Joan.
Right.
All the new shops, that's just because Joan Pride.
I need my shopping destination.
Just because,
right.
Joan Pride lives in the D.C. area there. So
right.
what's going to happen is, what are some of these new challenges that you guys are talking about? You guys point out that some of these commercial owners are going to be facing some new challenges.
Right. Well, we're saying, for example, that growth in commercial construction is going to slow to 10%, which doesn't sound that bad.
That's
really
pretty. You know, that's like that's like when some people are saying, "Oh my God, our economy is not growing at 6% anymore; it's only going at 3.9%." You know,
right, right.
It's like going from 200 miles an hour to 80 miles an hour.
Right, and another thing we're saying is that, and along with that. Profits aren't going to be, I guess, as crazy as they have been. They're going to be steady and dependable, but not in the stratosphere.
Well, and see, again, this is smart. This is when you find out who can operate a business, Joan.
Right.
When I mean, you know, if the prices are going through the roof,
it's easy when things are going
easy,
well.
Anybody can do stuff like that. That's what
right.
happened back in the 90s with the .com situation. And so now what you're going to have maybe are you going to have, you know, there probably will be some companies that won't make it, some commercial real estate companies that won't make it because they don't know how to, you know, especially some of the newer ones, they don't
right.
know how to make it when things tighten up a little bit.
That's right.
So it'll be interesting to see all that, Joan. Let's move over, Joan, and talk just a little bit first before we go to a break. About what you guys got a great table here of the global economic forecasts.
We do, don't we?
It's
Boy,
beautiful. It's a beautiful table.
Yeah, I wish your listeners could see it.
Well, if they were
and
subscribers
they could if
to
they
the...
subscribe to the Kiplinger Letter.
Exactly. So let's start at the top, Joan. What's Canada going to do next year?
Well, we're and in many of these cases, if not most, I think maybe most, the growth is going to slow. And with Canada, it's going to slow to 2.6% in 2007 from 2.9% in 2006. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that's much slowing going on there.
Not a lot of slowing. You know, that's got to be within the margin of error, Joan.
I would think so.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. Right. Stand by. We're going to take a quick break. Folks, we're going to get into some of the other areas. I like knowing what some of these other parts of the world are doing with regard to the economy. It helps me to forecast what my business is going to do. It's 20 after. We'll be right back with Joan Pride. Stay with us.
Be afraid just as long as you stand by me.
Getting a little Stones in there. Doesn't get any better than the Stones, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I'm Jim Blassingame. Joan, we're talking about the forecasts, the global forecasts that Kiplinger published on the front page of their Kiplinger Letter this week. Canada is going to be off by maybe 10%. But you know, Joan, that is 10%. Maybe that's not within the margin of error. But who can tell? Who could know?
It just doesn't seem that bad to me.
0.3% is not that much. But the Eurozone, Joan, according to Kiplinger, is going to go back below the 2% growth mark.
Now, see, to me, that's significant.
It is. That's 7%.
Yeah.
That's like 25%,
right.
Joan.
Now, and the
in
other
fact,
thing,
it is 25%.
Now, I'm treading in sort of dangerous territory here, but I noticed that the dollar has been falling against the euro. And so I've been trying to figure
well,
out,
you're our currency
I'm a currency expert, I've been trying to figure out what that means. And the Eurozone folks don't really like it, I'm assuming, because it hurts their exports.
Absolutely. No, they don't
like
that at all.
Oh, good.
That hurts the caviar and the and the you know, the champagne exports, Joan, and the
right.
and the limoncello. That hurts the limoncello export. But anyway, the Eurozone is apparently it had gotten up above 2%. I didn't realize they were at 2.6 for 2006, but for them to drop back below 2%, that's not good. I mean, that's not even close to the U.S. going from 4.5 to 2.9. I mean, I know that you may think that's a bigger drop. Well, actually, the U.S. is you've got the U.S. going from 3.3 in 2006 to 2.5, and even though their percentage is higher, the point is that anything for any country, Joan, in the upper twos, anywhere near 2-3%. Is a pretty darn good year for especially a country the size of the U.S.
Well, and I also think once you dip below 2, you're getting very sluggish.
Well, that's Japan. That's Japan range there. That's Japan numbers.
No, but I mean Eurozone going to 1.9.
Yeah,
going
below 2. I'm saying that's like Japan.
We're predicting the Eurozone to be worse than Japan.
Exactly. And so this is not good. And Joan, they just can't seem to. I think the Eurozone, and by that I'm to use the former defense secretary's term, old Europe, I think that they really don't watch the same ball game everybody else is watching.
Yeah, could be.
On many levels, Joan, on a global leadership level, on a foreign policy level, on the economy. I mean, look at all the things that they do over there, Joan, and I don't mean to be dissing them. I mean, folks, this is a wake up call for you if you're listening in Europe. Look at all the things that they do over there that basically prevent themselves from being successful. All their employment practices. All of the government regulations. I mean, we have friends over there. In fact, we had somebody on the other day from England, a good friend of ours who lives over there now, was talking about how there's virtually no entrepreneurial culture over there.
Yes, and we've talked about that.
Yeah, and one of the things that the Global Entrepreneurial Monitor, Joan, proved in this research is that where there is entrepreneurship, there is economic growth. There's a direct correlation between entrepreneurship and economic growth.
Right.
Between where if the soil is fertile for entrepreneurs in a country, then the economy flourishes, and that's the way it is in the United States. And Joan, it's also the way it is in many of the Eastern European countries.
Oh, that's right.
The largest growth numbers that are being posted these days are in the Eastern European areas. Let's move on down and talk about Mexico. Mexico's hanging in there, isn't it?
Well, it looks like quite a drop, 4.6% to 3.3%. But again, they're still above 3, and that's got to be good news.
Absolutely, no question about it. China, bless their hearts, they're dropping from 10.4 to 9.2. How will they handle that?
That's like nothing, though.
But Joan, it's probably a good thing for them.
Right.
China has, you know what's funny, Joan, is a lot of people have this misconception about China. A lot of people think China has, you know, when I speak to groups, Joan, I say, who do you think's got the biggest economy in the world? Many people say China. They equate growth rate total economy.
That's right.
And that's a mistake. I mean, China's not even the top 10 in terms of total economy output.
Yeah,
they're way down the list now. The word I hear is that, from my experts, is that in 20 years they will be the number one economy. Maybe, but not right now.
Right.
But their capital markets are very inefficient. And so the faster they grow, the more strain that puts on their banking system, on their capital markets, and it creates a lot of problems that could actually implode on them, Joan.
Well, and China is such a strange hybrid of free market capitalism combined with government totalitarianism.
Yeah, there's a word for that, Joan. This is a family show, and I can't really use it. but the thing is, but you know, Joan, I'm hopeful. Because I do believe that capitalism which is basically liberty in the marketplace.
Right.
I believe that will be the thing that will root out communism in China, and that's also my prayer, ladies and gentlemen. 29 after, we'll be right back with Joan Pride. We got more to come. Stay with us.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging around with me today. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. Don't forget to check out our blog while you're there. Lots of good stuff there. Thousands of articles, thousands of archives, hundreds and hundreds of Brain Trust members, including our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor of the Kiplinger Editors, who's right there over the years. She's deposited lots of wisdom with us. Joan, we're ticking down through the global economy projections here. Japan is dropping. Everybody is. Let's see. Is anybody going up? Oh yeah, Brazil.
I think there's one. Yes,
Brazil's going up. But anyway,
and that's it.
Everything else. The UK is going down.
Not bad.
A little bit, and Japan's going down a little bit. At least Japan's on the right side of the earth. You know, at least they're not in the hole there.
Just barely.
But, you know, Joan, and the United States, of course, we need to point out that the United States is, you guys say, is going to drop below 3% next year.
Now, when you say you guys say, do you have a different opinion? Yeah, do you have a different opinion?
Well, I just want to make sure that they know that it's not me who's being, it's not me who's being so dour about whatever. But, you know, 2.5... If you think about what we've done for the last few years,
right.
it's natural for there to be a little correction. But the reason why I don't think that I think that we could actually do better than that, Joan, is because of the employment situation.
Oh, right.
I mean, when you got that many people working, Joan, the economy can't be that bad.
Well, you would think that's right.
Of course, if the other countries out there are off a little bit, that does affect our business. And so,
true.
But Joan, you know, if the dollar, and this is where I'm getting over into your realm, Joan.
Oh, no.
If the dollar continues to drop, though, that's good for our manufacturers.
Oh, because it helps our exports.
Absolutely. It makes our exports. It's not good for your trip to Europe, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh.
But it's good for your European friends to come visit you.
That's right.
You do have friends in Europe, right, Joan?
Oh, many, many.
You know, this Brazil thing, Joan, have you been hearing people holding up Brazil as a model for energy independence? Have you been hearing about that?
No, I didn't realize that.
Well, they say that, you know, they don't export any oil from anybody, that they're using gasohol and all that sort of thing. Folks, here's the thing. I love Brazil. I've been to Brazil. The Brazilians are wonderful people. They don't have that many cars. I'm sorry. They just don't have that many cars. I was there about 12 years ago or so, mm-hmm. and they got a lot of cars. I'm not saying they don't have any cars, but the average person in Brazil doesn't own a car.
Oh, I did not know that.
Well, there are a lot of them. I mean, not nearly as many as Americans. And, I mean, when you drive around the countryside in Brazil, you see people walking.
Yeah.
Now,
and maybe if a household owns a car, it's just one and not three like here.
That's exactly right. And the other thing, Joan, to remember. And I don't know how it is today, but when I was there 12 years ago in Brazil, if you wanted to buy a car and finance it, what you did was you joined kind of a cooperative. You started making payments. And sometime during the 5 years that you made payments, your car would arrive.
Wow. And you wouldn't know, though.
No, because it would depend on when you came up on the list. It might be in the first 2 months. It might be in the last 2 months.
Wow.
But you would make payments even though you might not have a car yet. Now, once you got the car.
Or you might get the car within 2 months but keep making payments through the five-year period.
Oh, you still got to make payments for 5 years.
Either way.
It's just that over here, you get a, you know, you actually get a car before you make a payment.
Right, and it's not a cooperative kind of thing.
That's right. And so that's the way it was then. Now, maybe things are different. But anyway, the reason I bring that up, Jenny, is a lot of people have been throwing Brazil up to us. We look at what Brazil did. They've become more energy independent. They're not, like the U.S. I said, well, you know what? Let's put some things in perspective. Anyway, John, let's move over and talk about health care.
Okay.
Congress will insist on more mental health insurance benefits. Tell us about that.
Right. Well, there's going to be an expansion of rules on mental health parity. In other words, equalizing how much is covered between regular medical plans and mental illness. The big block to, I guess, more parity was the speaker, who is, of course, going to be not in that position anymore.
Right. Right. Mr. Hastert.
Correct, Denny right. Hastert.
And so now that Ms. Pelosi is going to be the speaker, soon to be, you think that's going to pass. Now, Joan, I don't know a lot about this particular issue, except that when I read this and when I hear you talking about it, it sounds like a mandate that will increase our insurance premiums.
That sure is what it sounds like.
Sounds like to me, because it sounds like the kind of stuff they do in New York and Massachusetts, where they require, for example, that you have unlimited fertility treatments if you want it. Even though you may be 70 years old, you have to pay for it. Stand by. Quick break, 22. We'll be right back with Joan Pride.
Hello, stranger.
Welcome back. It's 17 till. Thank you very much for hanging around with me. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate. Joan, you guys have an outstanding website, and I like telling folks about it. It's kiplinger.com. And that's where, folks, you can find lots of good stuff there for free, but you can also find their publications, the weekly letter that Joan and I work out of, the Kiplinger letter that's in its 84th year, I think, now, Joan. And then also the three biweekly letters, the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter. And then there's a magazine also, isn't it, Joan?
You bet. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And what about a phone number?
Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
Is that 30-day free trial still available?
You mean the Blassingame free trial?
The Blassingame 30-day free trial. I worked hard for that one.
Yeah, I'll have to check, but I believe so, yeah.
Joan, back just quickly to this mental health parity issue that the Congress is probably sure to pass when the new Congress comes in. It really reminds me of what some of these states like New York and Massachusetts and New Jersey, I think, and maybe California, others like that. I think I've forgotten which states do this, but they require that all carriers, if you offer a health care plan, it must include all these things like fertility, unlimited fertility treatments, and there's a lot of psychiatric stuff in there. There's a lot of podiatry and stuff like that. Instead of allowing people to pick and choose what they want depending on their life and what they want to pay for, why don't we just let people choose, Joan?
Well, and don't you think that a lot of this is maybe going too far in one direction? I mean, in the old days, you didn't have enough mental health coverage and health
right.
plans, and there should have been more.
Well, all you got to do is make it available, or maybe you could have I don't know. It's just the idea of parity, and of course, folks, as you know, my comments, Joan, as you know very well, have nothing to do with any kind of a judgment about mental health coverage. That's not it at all.
Right, right.
It's about the government mandating what you and I have. I don't like that. And I'm going to be speaking out against that as often as I can, Joan.
I'm sure you will.
I know you're not surprised. But one of the things I really appreciate Kiplinger, Joan, for continuing to talk about the benefits of health savings accounts, HSAs.
And we say they're getting better.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Well, we're saying they're going to become, they are becoming a better deal for both the folks who participate them and the employers as well, because banks are competing with each other a lot more now to offer these things. And when that happens, as that is happening, costs are going to go down.
Joan, when I go up to 30,000 feet and look out over the landscape, and I peer into my, while I'm up there, I peer into my 20-year crystal ball, which, as you know, I have a pretty good little crystal ball.
Yeah.
And but anyway, when I do that, I predict that we're going to look back 20 years from now, and we're going to say, even though the legislation that brought us the HSA was a very expensive one, that was the prescription drug bill.
Right.
That was a very expensive thing, and maybe, you know, it was too expensive. It included HSAs, health savings accounts, for small businesses and individuals. And I'm predicting that 20 years from now, we'll look back and we'll say, this was one of the best things that ever happened to help getting control of health care costs.
Okay, writing this down. 20
right
years. Okay.
And you know what? I'm gonna accelerate that. I'm gonna say in 5 to 10 years we'll say that.
So I should call you back in 2011 or 2016?
Well, I'll tell you what, Joan. If you call me, you can call me now, and I'm going to predict. I'm saying it's that way now. But I mean, I think the hard cases, the people who didn't like it to start with,
yeah,
will look back and say this was a good thing, Joan. It's because it's just very smart. It's a great way to help people do something you and I've talked about many times. Stop being a healthcare patient and become a healthcare consumer.
Consumer, right. Make the choices.
Make somebody a lot smarter. Joan, let's move on down and talk about human resources. You got some news on the 401k front.
Yeah, this is kind of neat. We say, think your company is too small to have a 401k plan, and maybe not. Again, we're getting more competition, and it's getting administrative tasks are getting easier. So a lot of this is getting done on the internet, online, and so that it's easier for an employer to offer these types of plans.
Well, and that's exactly right. And that's another thing that we got to do, Joan. We got to get more. Small business owners and smaller business owners have got to be able to offer more benefits than they are right now. And
right,
so many of them are not doing it because they don't have enough financial critical mass, and that's understandable. But a lot of them, Joan, are not doing it because they're not as up to speed on what these things are, how they work, how they can fit in there, and they think correctly so that it's going to add another job for the owner who doesn't have time to do the work they have now.
Well, I do think you're right, though. I think there may be some misconceptions out there about what is and is not available, and that they might be able to look at some more of these plans and find something that fits their business.
There are, as you point out, there are online administrators, right? Advice
right,
you can get from these online administrators. And folks, don't give up on this. Continue to find out about this. Talk to advisors. Talk to your CPAs. Talk to people that you know that are your banker, and find out about these things. If you're going to be successful in the 21st century, small business owner, you're going to have to be able to compete with big companies for the good people. And the good people want to work for you, but they got to have, they're going to want those benefits, and you got to provide them if you're going to be competitive. Stand by. Joan Pride and I will be right back. It's 10 Till. Stay with us. Mr. Joe Cocker, ladies and gentlemen. A crazy man. Joan Pride is our guest. Welcome back. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you for joining us. Thanks for hanging around with us. Joan, over on page 3 of the Kiplinger letter this week, you guys point out that the Labor Department, I love the way you say this. Kiplinger actually says this, folks. Labor Department bean counters. Finish the sentence, Joan.
Say they undercounted job growth by nearly 1 million
over
between
the last year.
Yeah, between 2005 and 2006. And, they were cutting costs over at the Commerce Department, and this is what happened.
A million people fell through the cracks. You know, Joan, that's the reason. That's what I was talking about earlier. That's the reason why. How could anybody be be not optimistic about the economy when we've got 4.2% unemployment and they missed a million people.
Right.
There are a million more people working than we thought. And here's the thing, Joan. This isn't like the 1990s when we had irrational exuberance and what was it McKay called it? Extraordinary popular delusions and the madness of crowds. We didn't have that. I mean, we had that in the 90s. We don't have that now. People who are in business today are in business because their model works.
Right.
It's a real model. It's a for-profit model. They got customers that actually buy stuff. And that's the economy we got right now. And when you got this kind of job growth, that we can actually be wowed by how many people are working, even if we missed a million. I mean, we got so many people we can't count them all. That makes me very optimistic about our economy and our future, Joan.
No doubt, right?
Yeah. Let's move down and talk about this is something, Joan, that I'm fascinated with this, Joan, and I've talked about this a long time, and this is the whole video conferencing thing. What's the story there?
Well, I guess video conferencing isn't new, but voice over internet protocol, which is what I think of as, you know, telephone on the internet,
yep,
is going to be married with that, and which would allow VoIP operators to move video and voice at the same speed on the same line.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have your picture and your audio synchronized better, and you can transmit it to your employees' computers.
All voice over internet. All information over internet goes in packets, folks. And when it's data, it goes in packets. It's broken up into packets when it starts out, and it travels over in these packets over the connection. And when it gets to the other end, it's put back together into the form that it started out in. And when it was data, it didn't matter if the packets traveled in an irregular way. When we started transmitting voice over internet, then that has to be those. It still goes as packets, Joan, but it has to be put together perfectly on the other end.
Right.
And that was a challenge in the early days. But, Joan, now when I travel, I do my show, I connect to my network over voice over IP.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So the quality of the connection is as good as ISDN.
Right.
Now, so if they're making that kind of progress with voice, the next step is logically video.
Exactly.
Now, Joan, this is what you and I've talked about in the past. You have heard me say that the biggest threat to the hospitality and the airline industry is not terrorism, it's technology.
Oh, I believe that.
And it's video conferencing.
That's right.
You tell me how many people will not travel across country for in a car or a plane if they can hook up a little video conference piece of equipment, and see the people face-to-face.
Because I would think, particularly if you're an airline, you're not making the big bucks on pleasure travel. You're making it on the business travelers who pay full freight.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I this is, Joan, I've been saying this, you heard me say this for 5 or 6 years, video conferencing will be a paradigm shift for the transportation and the hospitality industry.
Wow.
One day, I think it will be. Joan, let's move over and talk about minimum wage. What's the
story
there?
Jim, we don't have a lot of time now.
I won't get on my soapbox. I actually got that out of my system earlier this week.
Well, we do think Congress is going to pass a minimum wage hike this year, but we think what they're going to do is put it together with some sweeteners for small business, some tax incentives.
Which I think you guys report means increasing the Section 179 deduction.
Right, which is that great first year expensing instead of depreciation thing you can do.
But, Joan, it's already at $108,000. Most small business owners don't need that much every year.
Yes, but that's going to expire in a couple of years, so they're going to want to extend that.
Well, but I already got that, Joan. I already got that. I don't need you to give me something I already got. Don't increase, you know, Congress, don't increase Section 179 or extend it and tell me that's a sop to me for raising my minimum wage.
Right.
I bet you're glad we ran out of time, aren't you, Joan?
I'm depressed, yeah.
Well, more to come on minimum wage, folks. I'm never going to give up on that. Hey, Joan, thank you for being
here. Thank you, Jim.
Good job today.
Okay.
We'll see you next time. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. And as you know, this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.